Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG pod overflow, the Cinephobe cold opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
Said the OG pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Tom, favorite bad or defective kitchen ingredient?
So I like stale Oreos. I open up the box or the plastic covering of Oreos and I leave them open on the top of the fridge and they get super stale and really soft. So instead of like a hard crunch of an Oreo, you get this really soft melt in your mouth Oreo. And it's one of my favorite things. It's not an ingredient. If there's a second chance or a stale thing that I like, it's the stale Oreo.
I'll still go with my salmonella chicken. This is Pack Your Knives. I'm Kevin Ornovitz.
And I'm Tom Haverstrow.
Tom, there is a lot going on Top Chef. We got some last chance kitchen stuff. We like double episodes. The loser's bracket is percolating. People are coming in. People are going out. It is the moment of chaos at the middle of a Top Chef season.
Yeah, as if we didn't get enough of a curveball when Tom Colicchio came onto the scene at the end of the last episode and said, Gabriel and Nelson, you guys are going off into an immediate last chance kitchen playoff. I was like, wow, that's quite a curveball. And then they had another just total wrinkle in this with Nelson having the knee injury, and we had a part one and a part two because Nelson was out. They had to kind of MacGyver a new last chance kitchen incumbent. It was very, very confusing, Kevin. And I hope we can both hash this out together because I'm not quite sure I knew what happened.
Nelson strained MCL, will not play. That was sort of what came out of the elimination when Gabriel and he as a tag team or as a team finish at the bottom. They get thrown to Last Chance Kitchen, where they are scheduled to face off against Jamie, who is the incumbent Last Chance Kitchen champion. But as you said, Nelson can't play, so it's going to be a head-to-head. It is going to be Gabriel versus Jamie to return to the big show.
Tom comes out and says they're going to do a kind of like what your first dish that you cooked when you were a kid. Melissa King comes out and does that one with them. And Jamie goes with the rice. She does a rice cake with a soft scrambled egg with crab and lap chang oil on top. Then Gabriel with the eggs, anchovy paste, basically an umami bomb with a corn cob custard. I thought both of these dishes, Kevin, looked really good. And I make an omelet every morning, so I really appreciate a good omelet. And Gabriel catches his second L here with Jamie winning and getting back into the race. And I thought, okay, I know there's a part one, Kevin. I didn't know what was going to happen for a part two, but they always have something interesting. What did you think about that part one with Jamie and Gabriel?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's two crowd pleasers. I like you, I love an omelet. Do some tomato confit, that porcina anchovy butter look good, the corn custard, late fall. Like, he puts together a really nice looking plate. The problem is that kind of Jamie takes on more risk, because I think doing a crispy rice, like fried rice, is you gotta, that requires time, and is she gonna nail the crisp? You know, but who doesn't love lap chong fried rice, like the old Chinese sausage, and she has that sambal ginger sauce. So it was like, to me, it was sort of one of those things we're looking at it. It was like, hey, steak and eggs, it's a great dish, nice components. If she nails the higher degree of difficulty dish here, she's going to win, and she did.
When I got terminated, I didn't think I was going to come back, but I went Arnold Schwarzenegger on everybody. I'm back.
Then we get another round of Last Chance Kitchen, the part two of this Last Chance Kitchen, which we always love to watch. Brittany, Roscoe, Sasha, Kiki, and Gabriel do a cook-off to get back into the Last Chance Kitchen competition, not necessarily the Top Chef competition. I was a little confused by this. I thought maybe Jamie and someone else was going to get back into the competition. It wasn't totally clear at this point what the stakes were in this Last Chance Kitchen, right?
It took me a while to realize, and then it was like, oh, okay, with Jamie returning to the big show, they need a new incumbent, right? So someone's going to be bounced at the end of the main episode, and who are they going to face off against? Because there is no one there. So they needed a new kind of incumbent Last Chance Kitchen chef.
But couldn't that be Gabriel? Like, why couldn't it have been Gabriel?
It's a good question. And I don't know, man. That's one for the commissioner.
It's interesting. I mean, I wanted to see Roscoe get back into it, or Brittany, Sasha, any of these that didn't really have a long tenure on the show. It was good to see them cooking back again.
So one of the debates in my household is the extent to which Last Chance Kitchen is too forgiving. And let me explain. I think you and I have talked at length, and I would challenge anyone who disagrees, that Last Chance Kitchen is sort of the ultimate digital product for a reality competition show. Like, it is brilliant, right? The fact that we get really excited for another 12-minute mini episode, you get to see what essentially you love about the show. It's great. I am very open to the idea that there should be a loser's bracket where, through great challenge, you can get back to the main show for a final five or so.
Yeah.
I do think I am sympathetic to the argument in my household that just letting someone win a couple of weeks and get back in a final nine, like it does cheapen survival to some extent. And I want to kind of get where you are on this. I mean, look, I love Jamie as a chef. She's not on my team, but it's great to see her back. But I am sympathetic to the argument that you start getting to, you know, participation trophy land a little bit when, oh yeah, just everybody come back in, you know, like so where are you on the overall? Because, by the way, let's not forget, Tom, returning to the show is a very recent advent of Top Chef. That is the last few seasons. And I just kind of want to get a sense of where you are on a broader scale on, hey, you lose and then you come back.
Two things. One is, do they have to do it twice? Because Jamie's coming in now and it looks like they're going to do another Last Chance Kitchen re-entry into the competition. So there is a competition committee making the decision, Kevin, saying Last Chance Kitchen is not just one re-entry into the competition. It's two. So I question that there. The other thing I want to think of is, what if they just had like a point system where all of the eliminated chefs can compete every episode? So it's not just like a one-on-one battle. It's points accumulated over time. So that way you're almost incentivizing an older chef to get back into the competition rather than just like, oh, Jamie just got eliminated and she's back. It might bring some more interesting early elimination back into the competition. So I think the one-on-one aspect is interesting as a structure, as a format.
Given the limited time, it's tough to sort of focus in on four or five chefs if you have multiple chefs competing in a Last Chance Kitchen too often.
I don't want to nitpick on Last Chance Kitchens because we both love the show.
We love it, yeah.
But I hear you is that Jamie's eliminated and then quickly jumps back in. And like Joe Flam a few years ago was eliminated, came right back in, and then won the whole damn thing. It does seem like sometimes we get someone who just hops out of the competition right back in, and it doesn't have too much weight. Like when people are eliminated, you're kind of like, yeah, but you know, we might see them back in a week or two. So I love Last Chance Kitchen, and I love seeing all of these chefs compete. But I hear what your household is saying is that it seems maybe the loser's bracket is just a little too strong.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm for one returnee, the way it kind of was. And that's where I'm at. And again, this is not a slight on Jamie. I'm thrilled to see her. We'll talk about how she redeemed herself. I am sympathetic to the point where I think we need one returnee over the course of the season, not these sort of multiple, hey, yeah, you should really have to survive last. Remember in the early season where it was like 8-9 weeks and it's just this grind, but at the end of it, and it made sort of, it was the grueling nature of winning week after week after week, and there's still multiple weeks ahead. They'd send someone through those doors. You had to beat them. It was just like one dragon after another into the cave, and you have to kind of slay them. And I like that, and I would like to see them kind of limit it there. I don't want there's getting to be a little bit of a slippery slope where, hey, everybody's back in every week. You know, that's the only caution I would say. And I still, as you said, I love Last Chance Kitchen. It is the ultimate digital entertainment product. It's a brilliant advent.
Let's touch here on what happens in part two.
We have five contestants.
Gabriel gets an L in the elimination challenge, an L at the Last Chance Kitchen, and he comes in and decides to do, let's back up here for a sec, what the prompt is. They had to do something that, wait, what was the prompt? I'm now forgetting what the prompt was.
It was, hey, there's a lot of good shit in the pantry, and just go get some stuff and make something. That was the prompt, which I kind of like.
It's just make a dish with all this stuff in here. Okay, fine. That's why I don't have it written down what the prompt was, because it was just kind of an open-ended thing. And Gabriel comes in, and this is the age-old question. Do you do something that you screwed up on or given them so many times, or do you do something new? And he decides, Gabriel, to do a proteinless salad with plums and watermelon and tomato and spices and smoked feta. Turns out to be an excellent dish, even though it wasn't something that he's been doing a lot on the show. He loves this salad. He says he eats it a lot. Roscoe ends up with the red rice with shrimp and low country farro. It was with pancetta. It looked so good. It
looked really good.
Brittany comes in with the schnitzel with pork and caper lemon butter salad. Sasha with this Calabrian chili with ricotta eggs, pasta, doing pasta in 30 minutes. Thomas is like, what? What are you thinking? And she pulls it off. Kiki with the pomegranate relish and sardines with the yogurt. I did not think that looked appetizing at all, Kevin.
Oh, I love sardines. I'm kind of, I'm on teen tinned fish. Remember, like I.
Yeah, but the yogurt, I don't know.
I love fish from a tin. I love that Portuguese, all those canneries. I love that stuff. So I thought it was a really gutsy move. It was interesting with Brittany because, I mean, that is her signature. I mean, that is a dish that has won her beard awards. And so to watch a chef kind of on their last leg sort of say, you know what? She even said, I'm not going to leave Top Chef without doing a pork schnitzel, which is what she does in her Virginia restaurant, her renowned award-winning restaurant. The Gabriel thing was fascinating. We saw a little shade from Kiki saying, look, all I've seen is the guy do is steak. And so he comes and does a very bright salad. Looked really good. Although it is, I got to tell you, Tom, I was a little surprised strategically. I think it's one thing to sort of say, let's switch it up. When you're 1 in 5, it's just really hard. Like it's, you can make that the second or third best dish in a fivesome. You got 4 professional chefs you're up against. I think that must be the best freaking salad you've ever made. And it looked really good. It was a really suspect strategic decision, in my opinion.
Yeah. And I think when we look at like the history of when there isn't like a vegetarian prompt, how many times does a salad win in the competition? I'm sure Lynn at TopChefStats.com can probably provide us the answer with that. But Kevin, look, Sasha, I'm so happy to see her back. I thought she was great in Last Chance Kitchen. I think she's really funny. I think she's really talented. And she pulls off the pasta in 30 minutes. And it's not just pasta that she made, the harissa sauce with all the different spice and flavor. Kevin, that dish, I just wanted to eat in one giant, like in my palm, just shove it in my mouth. It looks so good.
Yeah, that like really silky cavatelli. This is where I always marvel at these people. Is just, she said, 30 minutes to do homemade pasta, some sauces with real depth, and it, you know, it's clear. Look, he's going to take the he's going to award the best tasting dish, but you have to defer and just honor somebody who's able to freaking pull that off in half an hour. You know, worse is, again, no disrespect to Gabriel's salad, which looked delicious. I think I'd love that salad. It's just, you know, look at the degree of difficulty.
Yep.
And it's still what I love about Top Chef. It's still a show that takes that into account. The judges are very cognizant of what you had to do. It's not just, wow, what did it taste like on the plate? It is looking around saying, what level of ambition did you have? We saw it on the main show as well. It's just like, you know, they really reward homemade breads, homemade pastas, and there's nothing that gets you in trouble sort of like doing store-bought anything. And so good for Sasha. She's on my team. Thrilled that she'll be the incumbent LCK chef going forward for the next few weeks, hopefully. We'll see.
Yeah. I was thrown off by Tom's comment when he said, hey, you're going to need this jacket.
Right.
And I was like, wait, is she going into the competition or is she in Last Chance Kitchen still? And so I was waiting until I watched the next episode to figure that out. And Jamie comes back with a huge entrance back into the competition. Padma says, you know, it seems like I don't think I can remember a re-entry with as grand of an applause and excitement than what we saw with Jamie coming back. Not just her personality, but I think she, I don't know, I feel like she is a really good chef and someone who I think got a little bit of a raw deal on her exit. And I'm excited to see her back, just as excited as everyone else. Kind of thought, though, maybe are they too excited in a competition to see Jamie back? Do you think a little bit of them was like, I'm glad Gabriel wasn't there? I think there was a comment about that is like, I hope Gabriel doesn't come back because he's really, really, really good. But Jamie is back into the competition, Kevin.
Yeah. I think it's a question of if someone has to come back, let it be Jamie. But I'm with you. You want to see people eliminated when you're in there. As much as you might like them personally, you want the field to whittle. You want to be among the few, not among the many. The quick fire was the defective ingredients, as you talked about. No bad stale Oreos, but basically a bunch of like bruised bananas and avocados.
No, not bad Oreos, Kevin. Not bad Oreos. They're improved vintage.
They're good bad Oreos.
Yes. It's a dry aged Oreo. How about that? A dry aged Oreo, Kevin. They do the second chance ingredients. And I wanted to know of those on the table, what did you really, really gravitate towards?
I love when I buy bananas, I have to get the really bruised ones.
Yeah.
That is a me thing. I only eat really bruised bananas that are sugary and brown and ugly. Like, I love that.
Isn't that weird? Like, I didn't even know people hated that. And they prefer a green banana. My sister-in-law is the same way. She likes a green banana.
Starchy.
Yeah, I'm with the soft, sweet banana. So I actually thought that, like, hey, if I was going to do a dish, like, I'm going straight to that one.
Fish heads are actually really good. And I go to this place out in San Gabriel Valley that does like a whole catfish, and the head is delicious. As you said, you know, there's a lot of fattiness in the head. Like it's a really, I was happy to see that because it's a really good bad ingredient. Yeah, so they each have to take some weird ass like discarded part of the fish, or Gabe does, you know, stale bread. Byron does mutton. You know, most of the lamb we eat, there's a reason we call it lamb. Like it's a young sheep is typically what we eat when we eat lamb. Like mutton is kind of a tougher, lower grade meat. And so he does that.
Leftover wine. What is leftover wine? That was one of the items. Like, what is that?
Fermented wine. I mean, I think that's, you know, when it ferments, it has a different sort of, it has a different kind of hit.
Okay.
And so that was what was going on there. But yeah, so everyone takes their bad stuff, mushy cucumbers, which I don't like, actually. I think mushy cucumbers are gross because I keep cucumber in there because I do this farro salad that calls for cucumber. And if I've left it in there a few days, it's just, there is nothing more disgusting than taking that cucumber out and it is not firm.
Pretending his demise here, Avishar decides to do a little bit of flaccid cucumber.
These cucumbers are a little bit older. They're a little bit more flaccid.
I'm with you. I do not like a old, gooey cucumber. So that was an interesting choice. But Shota does do the fish head.
Gets immunity.
Yes, finally won a quick fire. Gives me confidence to be able to do more dishes like this. Maybe not to everyone because they are fish heads, but
gets immunity and wins this challenge. And we have, you know, just to breeze through the spoon bread with Sarah with the shrimp gravy, Gabe with carrots and burnt bread, Malay, Jamie with the turkey, with corn fritters. Notice, Kevin, a lot of fritters this season. Is that like a big thing in LA? Like the corn fritter? Or I feel like it's been every episode we've seen a fritter. Don's been doing a whole bunch of them. Is it that it's a cool way to say like a fried thing? It's more trendy to say a fritter rather than just like, I don't know. It just seems like we're seeing a lot of fritters on the menu.
I noticed that too. And actually, I don't know because I've just been in so few restaurants in the last 15 months, but it's a trend worth noting, right? Like Dawn had her fennel rose fritter a couple weeks ago. By the way, let's talk about Dawn for a second. And I know I always like to talk about Dawn. I'm just kind of going back the last few episodes. Has she done anything other than just standout stuff? I mean, when's the last time she wasn't on a top three? I mean, I guess that rose challenge, she got praise for her fennel rose fritter. It wasn't top three. But, I mean, the duo of popcorn, the catfish and bison, the wood-fired mushrooms, you know, with the tarragon mascarpone. I mean, she gets awarded for that. The tamarind-based sirloin, which we'll do later. Like tuna collar here with a peanut curry. I mean, she's just on fire. She is going to be top three. She is cooking food. The judges are pleased. She is like, she's here.
I love collar, by the way. Great choice of all the items on there. Like going for the collar was really brilliant.
Sometimes when you get yellowtail collar at like a Japanese restaurant cooked, like it can be a little dry. Like my thing of collar is that you just can't, it can dry, but I'm with you. I love a good, I love a good fish collar. Gabe gets for his burnt bread mole and braised carrots, like gets a little one. The bottoms are Byron, the aforementioned mutton is not what you want to do tartare. That is not a meat you want to do tartare. And I think they were as friendly about it as they could be. Yeah. Maria is allergic to shrimp, but serves shrimp cake.
Maria, what are you doing? What are you doing?
I don't know. Kind of a strange choice.
If you can't taste it, then don't prepare it. If you have the opportunity to do something else. She really likes a good challenge. She challenges herself. The banana salsa, okay, fine. But doing the shrimp cakes, I question that decision, Kevin.
Yeah, it is a strange choice. And Avishar, his sort of his Jingdu-style turkey chop, which is kind of like a sweet sauce you see on like kind of Chinese rib recipes, was dry, had too many sauces. He had a chili yogurt. He had another sauce, the Jingdu. So he gets dinged there. And then we go forward to the elimination challenge, which is to prepare, 65 meals for frontline workers, Tom. And like, this is a really good challenge. And again, something Top Chef does really well is sort of like, whether it's news of the day or sort of larger context for a challenge, they do this exceptionally well. You know, look, it's easy to forget. I've said it on the show several times this season. Oh, the greatest thing about quarantine is you get to stay home and cook. And the bottom line is essential workers, by the way, whether they're working at hospitals, whether they're working at retail stores, like those people ain't home cooking. Like these are the people incurring risks so the rest of us can function. My sister is an ER doctor. So, you know, I have some frame of reference for this. And yeah, it's easy to forget that the rest of us are sitting here trying to learn how to sear duck and screwing around in the kitchen. Because we can. There are a lot of people who can't.
Yeah. And shout out to Jose Andres, some of the best restaurants in the world, but also every single natural disaster or something that happens in the world, he is there within hours trying to raise money and trying to feed people on the ground. So World Central Kitchen is a great initiative, and I'm glad that they gave it a spotlight here. And it was cool to see Maria's wife is a firefighter and that this hit home for her as well. And the frontline workers having the video, little tributes there to recap the dishes, obviously moved the contestants. And we have to keep in mind when this was taped, you know, this was kind of in the middle of a lot of different natural disasters of the fires in Portland and also with the pandemic. This was a really touch and go time in America. And so I actually, when I was watching this, I was kind of taken aback by how much has changed since then. Because this is just kind of like a moment in time. And We got to see some of the personal touches here that they're bringing into this competition with Chris losing an uncle to COVID and how much he meant to him. So yeah, like Top Chef does this amazingly well, is going for the sentimental or going for the tugging at the heartstrings, but it doesn't feel forced. And this one with the packaging, it worked well with the competition because I think you had to come up with something that would work well in a Tupperware and packaging away. And some people just really did not, you know, conceive of the dish in a way that made sense in the Top Chef way, is that you have to cater your dish to the challenge. And I thought that was really interesting. In this element, it seems seamless, the way that you can incorporate the pandemic and feeding frontline workers with a challenge.
And it is quite a challenge. I mean, 65, and you can see just like the amount of sheer work they had to do to prepare these well-earned dishes. But 65 is a lot to cook for. And so it was interesting to kind of see the choices, because there weren't a lot of restraints apart from that. You could pretty much do what you want. Yeah, it needs to be something that can fit in one of those Tupperwares and something ideally could be reheated. But there was a wide berth. I mean, let's start with Shota, just because it's funny. We wanted to know, has Lynn done stats for people who have immunities like average finish? Like, actually, we don't know. I mean, I think it's understood that Shota would have been on the bottom. I don't know.
I kind of remember lots of times where they go to the bottom and they say, you would have gone home. You're lucky you got immunity. You would have gone home if it weren't for winning the quickfire earlier. So the stat that Top Chef Stats does have is challenges won with immunity. There's been 14 winners of the immunity, but I don't have anything here about
the phone it in factor.
The phone it in bottom three with immunity. So that's something, Lynn, if you're listening, we'd love to have, is what percentage of contestants with immunity finish in the bottom three? And is that disproportionate to the normal rounds of Top Chef?
But as you said, it's difficult because, I mean, I feel like sometimes they don't put them on the bottom because they're not going to get voted out. So why put them on the bottom, kind of thing? Sometimes it happens in a team challenge where, you know, but I don't like it. Would Shota have displaced Maria, or they have four people on the bottom? I mean, I don't know. But Shota clearly wanted to do onigiri. Like, he wanted to do rice balls. It's a great idea. It's perfect for one of those things. And it seems like when he realized, hey, you need the short grain rice for like sushi rice versus basmati rice, very different things, like almost entirely different grains. And you can't do, it's just not something you can do with basmati rice. And it seems like he kind of just shut down, right? Like my sushi rice isn't here. So what the hell am I going to do? I mean, I think it was a little unfair. I thought Gail said it right. Like, you often see those sort of soft braised chicken wings or chicken legs. Like, when you go to, like, there's some Japanese grocery stores here, like full on Japanese grocery stores, Mitsuha here in Los Angeles. And, you know, they have sort of a, hey, like, takeout section, right? And here are some dishes you can go home and warm up, almost exactly the same conceit. And often it is that sort of soft, and I'm with Gail, like it's there's something unpleasant about it, but yet it is sort of a staple of Japanese to-go cooking, is sort of the not rubbery skin, but the sort of soft skin rather than the crispy skin, sort of boiled chicken. But yeah, he clearly phoned it in, Tom.
Yeah. Do you think he would have gone home without immunity?
Nah, it didn't look like it was that offensive relative to, I mean, we'll talk about Avishar's. And I do want to talk about Avishar's quite a bit, but I don't think he goes home. And also, I don't think he, I mean, we've got to assume, if he doesn't have immunity, he's totally approaching this differently.
I think so. The gray poached chicken skin, I mean, that no one likes that. I'm sorry. Like, maybe this is something that is not with most ethnic cuisines, is that you like a poached, like, gummy chicken skin. I want something crispy, and Byron does a really good job here with this one, but Shota just really dropped the ball. And part of that is that he didn't have those ingredients, like you said, but this is Top Chef. If you are thrown that curveball, you have to be able to sit on it and try to smash that one out of the park, even though it's an off-speed pitch.
I would love to see him do some fun onigiri 1 week. I'm hoping we get to see that.
Yeah, and you know, the miso sweet potato drumstick just did not do very well. I think actually, if he didn't have immunity, he would have been in the bottom three, I think, with this dish. But I
hello, listener. I'm sure you don't need me to tell you that we at Cinephobe love our pets. Zach and Boogie are inseparable. I've got two cats and a dog, and Amin is giving his best ass-on performance to convince dog owners that he loves their pet.
Hey, Noodle. Hey, boy. How you doing? And Noodle's just like, ah, whatever.
Which is why today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. For many pet parents, summer is all about making travel plans like adventuring through the national parks, visiting pet-friendly beaches, or road tripping across the country. Wherever your journeys take you and your furry friend, you can help protect them along the way with a plan from ASPCA Pet Health Insurance. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customizable accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they may need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are, because vet bills can really add up, especially when you're least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim, and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance. Hello, listener. Guess who's back? It's me, Anthony Mays, your favorite butcher-turned-podcast producer, and I'm here to talk to you about ButcherBox. ButcherBox is the most convenient way to get high-quality meat and seafood that you can trust delivered straight to your doorstep. Free shipping, vacuum sealed packaging. It's ready to go right then. It's ready to pop in the freezer. You get exclusive member deals and a variety of high quality cuts at an amazing value. Going to the grocery store can be a huge pain. You're usually in a rush at an inconvenient time. You're waiting in line at the meat counter. You're taking a number. Maybe this place doesn't have a number. You're jostling with fellow customers. You're trying to get that ribeye that you want or that nice piece of salmon. Maybe the butcher that you're dealing with has a bad attitude or something. I don't know. That was never me, I promise. But maybe it happens. ButcherBox takes all of that out of the picture. You are always prepared with meat and seafood in the freezer, and you're not going to find quality for this price anywhere else other than ButcherBox. So sign up at butcherbox.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S, and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. You can choose salmon, chicken breasts, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/dings and use code DINGS, D-I-N-G-S, to choose your free for a year offer plus get $20 off your first order.
This is a tough one. I don't think that the chefs would have the stones to the judges to send him home, given how good he's been. I don't think this dish was egregiously bad. Like, it wasn't undercooked. I know you like undercooked chicken, but there wasn't something egregiously bad with this dish. I think he should have been in the bottom three without the immunity. So Shota, he had a couple missteps earlier. He wins the quick fire and then falls back off the wagon here on this elimination challenge, but he has immunity, so it's cool.
Some interesting things that came to the surface on this challenge. I mean, one is that oven and stovetop space is a real thing in these competition shows, and we tend to forget. You know, it dictated a couple of different decisions. One was Maria having to go to the wood oven for her tortillas, and an event that, had it not happened, might have kept her off the bottom. In fact, she seemed to have a really good salsa verde pork. Her main component was delicious, but she ended up serving them raw tortillas, which is sort of a fatal error.
Maria, I don't think I have to tell you what went wrong with your dish.
Yeah, I know.
What was it?
The pork.
No. Your tortilla was raw.
Was it?
On one side.
Honestly, this challenge got the best of my emotions.
I thought the pork, the tomatillo, gave it a really nice acidity to it. Thought it had really great flavor. And I thought the corn was nice.
Oh, thank you.
I thought you had the best stew of the day. I think if it wasn't for that tortilla, you wouldn't be standing here.
I just made a rookie mistake.
We also saw with Jamie, who ends up winning, where I believe she looked like she wanted to maybe roast her eggplant, but she's like, hey, there's just not enough space in the oven. I'm going to deep fry it, which turns out to be a brilliant thing because there's nothing better than that gooey deep fried eggplant. I mean, who doesn't love that when you go? And so it's just a reminder that infrastructure wars within the show, like as pleasant as these chefs are, you ain't giving up your stovetop space if you have it. And you're not giving up your oven space if you have it.
Yeah, I feel like when we have Chef Testens come on the show, Kevin, a lot of them talk about that. It's like, what you didn't see on this episode is that, you know, I just had no cutting board or something like that, where I had no oven space or stovetop. So great point, pointing that out. And then you have Maria. Let me just go back to Maria for a second. When she goes to the judge's table, I want your thoughts on this, Kevin. When Tom or Padma or Gail says, "There was one thing wrong with this dish," do you know what it was? How do you answer that question?
I mean, I think you answer it honestly. They're no dummies. Did she not know that her tortilla on the other side was raw? I mean, I know there was a real – wasn't she – I feel like there – I can't remember and I couldn't see it very clearly that someone was like, is there – like at the last threesome that there – do I have enough time or something? And it seemed like she was just really stretched for time. And I'm not sure if that was the case, but she – plainly did not know that on the underside of her tortillas, they were uncooked. So that's probably what it was. I don't think she was being dishonest. I didn't think she might not have known.
I always get nervous when that question is posed because it almost exposes another insecurity that you had about your dish. And it might expose that you didn't eat your dish or eat an element of your dish. And so I feel like that is a landmine of a question is, do you know what was – there was one flaw in your dish. Do you know what it was? I get nervous for people who have to answer that question. I feel like there's almost a no win there. So she's in the bottom. Look, let's talk about Chris's dish. Almost a fatal flaw with the unseasoned chicken. I don't know if it's going home worthy, but man, when you're presenting a chicken that doesn't have much flavor at all, that is a tough one to endure and still stay in the competition.
Chris is an interesting contestant, and we've seen contestants of his ilk before, right? Like, he nails the difficult portion of the task here, which is making chicken breast on the grill tasty. Or not tasty, but like cooking it right. They're making it juicy. And by every account, the chicken breast was cooked, I think, as Kwame said, immaculately. So that is hard. I mean, grilled white meat chicken is hard to make good. I'm sorry, it just is.
Yeah.
Especially if you're not brining it, right? Like, and so here he is doing the hard thing, which is making good. The easy thing is salt. Any idiot can add salt. And I just wonder, one of two things is going to happen to Chris. Either he's going to go out pretty damn soon because he doesn't season his food, or he's going to have an Adrian turn. And you might recall Adrian, one of my favorite chef testants from recent seasons, a couple seasons ago, right? She's sort of nerding around in the middle. She's finding herself criticized repeatedly through the middle portion and the early portions of the show for under seasoning. And so I think there's also this extension where when a chef under seasons, they get hit for being soulless or not putting any love or soul into their food, right? Which I kind of appreciated Padma's revision of that, which was not that she was cooking with no soul, it was no salt. And so one of two things is going to happen. This is going to be a pivotal week for Chris where he's going to realize, like, I'm doing everything else right. Like, this is a guy who knows how to make a sauce, who knows how to cook proteins, right? Like, one of the reasons I drafted him as highly as I did is I just reasonably assured this is a dude who knows how to cook technically, just as Adrian did, right? And there was a point in that season where Adrian had, like, her aha moment. She got dinged repeatedly for not sufficiently seasoning her food. So you know what she started doing, Tom? Get ready for it. Sit down. She started seasoning her food.
And that's a quick fix. It's not like
it's a quick fix, Tom. Like, grains of salt are very abundant in any kitchen. Mine, yours, theirs, right? And so I think that's what's going to happen with Chris is he's just going to get the memo because he's doing everything else right. Like, it's hard to make white meat chicken. White meat chicken is inherently dry. By the way, white meat poultry is just bleh. Unless you're brining it, like, it's so rarely good.
And the habanero.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
He didn't even realize that the habanero wasn't spice, or like there wasn't much heat at all. He said, I put it in there for the flavor, but not the spice. And that actually backfired because he was like, they all said, we didn't even taste the habanero. So you put it in there for no spice, just the flavor, and we didn't get either of them. So, you know, that was not his best dish. He's fifth time this season in the bottom three, Kevin. He is just holding on this season. And you're right. If he can just season his food, which seems like a shooter who's going through a slump in the playoffs. Like LeBron has everything else going in his game, but he just has a hitch in his jumper. And someone just pulls him aside and says, "Hey man, you're just your elbow needs to be tucked in a little bit more." And then suddenly LeBron is unstoppable. I'm not saying Chris is LeBron here in this analogy, but it just seems like this little hitch that he has or this little blind spot can be easily fixed, and then he can go on a run.
Yeah, and that's what I'm hoping. And I think there is a precedent. Again, Adrian to me is the best. I mean, I think she was probably a better chef than Chris at the time, but this is something we've seen before, and it is correctable.
All right, let's talk about Don, because Don, as you mentioned, just hasn't put out a bad dish in a long time, and it just seems like she's really hitting her groove. The top sirloin with coconut rice grits, it's like her dish that she prepared, I was like, I want all of that. I thought she had a really good chance of winning this competition. Actually, when they said, who the winner was, I expected fully that it was Dawn, and I am very much regretting trading her, Kevin.
And she kind of knows the shot, right? Like, this is essentially a comfort food challenge, right? Like, we're not plating anything glorious here. We're putting it into Tupperware. And, you know, what is really good? Braised meat. It's comfy, right? It's not a huge technical challenge. Tamarind is a lovely kind of tangy way to do it. She's always so good with that little starch, like coconut rice grits, right? Like, just think about it in terms of contrasting it to Chris, let's say roasted Brussels sprouts and a gratin. Okay, that's fine. She maxes out every component on her plates. And that's what I really love about her right now. So the maple braised seared cabbage. I'm very into like miso braised cabbage, like maple braised cabbage.
Cabbage in general, Kevin. You know, I'm good. A big fan of cabbage.
I don't make it here a lot. I don't have a lot of support for it in this household, but I do love, like, you ever go to Vernick in Philadelphia? They do a miso braised wood fire, or like a miso braised and then wood fired cabbage. And it is one of my favorite side dishes in America.
It's great. Just don't eat too much of it. The people in the room might not appreciate that.
It's a tough road food, actually.
Yeah.
But I love everything she's doing. Like, even those smaller decisions are working. And again, she's just executing. It seems like the time management thing is way in the past. And I just think she's a force.
Another one of your team members, Sarah, just comes in with the Mediterranean dish with the falafel, the veggie falafel with hummus and flatbread that she perfectly cooks or bakes. And Kwame says it was fluffy, and she incorporates what else?
Mother yogurt.
Oh, sh**.
I know Malarkey was saying it on his power rankings that she's going to win this whole thing. And I can't disagree with that. I mean, she is just every time out, and the whole, like, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know if it's going to taste good. And then it comes out and it's just like, oh, shucks, I'm one of the top three. She is just so good, Kevin.
Yeah. Hey, look, there's a reason yogurt is yogurt. There's a reason it's loved in the Mediterranean. It's loved in South Asia. It's loved in France. Like, it's like yogurt's freaking good in a yogurt mint sauce. Like, falafel's just a winner. I mean, it's again really gutsy. You go with vegetarian item, but look, she knows how to execute, and it's a really everybody loves falafel and carrot hummus. Good for her. I'm thrilled. Sarah is yet emerging. Another. I just feel like I'm seeing her on top pretty much every week, in some form or fashion. And Byron had a really good dish. Byron's doing some good cooking, Tom. I know he's kind of the other middle. He's like the other middle brow in this competition, but that pollo la brasa looked delicious. Bright corn salad, peppery potatoes. I kind of had him as a strong fourth, it seemed like, when you were kind of looking at the standings. Gabe underperformed a little bit, by no means on the bottom, but apparently his achote chicken was a little dry. He had the XO sauce green beans, the sweet corn tamales, but they weren't overly impressed. I had him sort of finishing fifth here.
Yeah, they said there was competing flavors in there, which sometimes it's a compliment. In this case, it wasn't so much. I'm still confident. He's my best competitor on my team. Gabe, Byron, and Jamie are probably in that second tier of competitors. And really, Gabe has been really strong in this competition. Not his best showing here, but Jamie coming back into the competition, having the confidence to do this dish and winning the elimination challenge. what a performance from Jamie. I'm very, very happy to see her back on my team and back in the competition.
She just assembles a really smart dish, right? So you have as one major component the kimchi tofu soup. It is hearty, even though it's obviously not meat-based. It's got flavor, it's comfy, and then you have this lovely just sort of, a protein in rice. This is kind of classic Asian protein in rice. She does a bulgogi braised pork, that lovely, just yummy, gooey, deep-fried eggplant. I mean, we all love that, like, kind of garlic eggplant dish. You get it, you get often at Chinese restaurants. It's just such a winner, and that's what she does. There's nothing overly complicated about it.
You know what I liked about it, Kevin, is that she thought of, hey, these components, I can't just throw into the soup. I have to have them on to the side. And then if you'd like to add them, you can. And I thought that actually had some layered sophistication to the challenge itself that I think the judges really appreciated. So while it wasn't complicated, it had some depth to it. And I actually thought that was really smart. She wins this elimination challenge after bouncing back into the competition and really shows out.
I won. Pew, 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 pew.
She's not just a character who makes funny noises. She is the malarkey of this season. I'll still contend that she is going to hang around and she wins this challenge, and I'm very happy for her. I thought Dawn might have pulled out the win here, especially with the phone call home with her lovely mother, Dolores, who had had the stroke a few months earlier. We saw that foreshadows maybe more wins than actually in eliminations when they do the phone call home. And in this case, Dawn's phone call did not end up with a win, but she was very strong in her dish. So Dawn, I mean, she might not have won, but I just think she had maybe the best day.
All right, we need to talk about Abhishar. I was shocked because, I'm a home cook. I'm basically an amateur. But a thing I learned early on is anytime you make a stew, a curry, you always brown the meat first, right?
Yeah.
You always, you heat up the pan, you get it really hot, you season the meat on both sides, salt and pepper, really, that's all I ever do. And then you just sear it, brown it. You just get it. What it does is it locks in this flavor by kind of like caramelizing the flesh. And it is just essential. It is what any even basic home cook knows to do is when you're making, I make chicken curry here all the time. I do this like basil coconut green curry that we love. And it's just it's a basic home cook 101 thing. I was just shocked. And I adore Abhishar. I've loved a lot of what he's done this season. But I was just like,
yeah,
really? Like it's something I learned 15, 20 years ago. Yeah, I'm shocked.
And the comment where he says, like, I learned now that I got to do that. I was like, wait, you didn't know this? Like, this I feel like is pretty basic stuff. And the fact that he is a molecular gastronomist, someone who works with the chemistry and the science of cooking, seems like that would be in his wheelhouse. Is like, I got to braise or I got to cook that beef before I throw it in to that curry to retain to encapsulate the juiciness and retain some of the seasoning and spice. It just, man, that really missed the mark. And I thought the concept of it, like a beef curry, Bengali style, with all the spices, it just seemed like, oh, that's going to be really good. And I was stunned to see that it was just so flat with no flavor and the protein wasn't cooked properly. This was as big of a miss as you can have on Top Chef, where there was no flavor, the protein was cooked improperly, and it just missed. And Abhishar really surprised like you that he did not figure this out ahead of time.
What's heartbreaking about it is like, the concept is right. Like when I was thinking about, you play that game when they announce what the parameters of the challenge are, like, what would I do? Right. And my thing is, I turned around, I was like, you make a one pot meal, right? You're cooking for 65. You're just spooning stuff into, it's one of the reasons I sort of respected Chris is like, he's grilling chicken for 65 rather than just sort of, browning protein for a big one pot dish. And it's like, I would argue that if he sears or browns the meat, like, it's hard for a Bengali curry to be anything other than pretty good. Like it's hard to be any worse than pretty good. Like, if you just sear meat with salt and pepper and then let it just, and you've got sufficient spice in that stew, it's going to be, it's certainly not going to send you home because you're essentially just braising. It's not hard. And that's what was just so shocking about it to me. You know, again, as you said, what's interesting is he is a guy who understands sort of the science and chemistry of cooking. And so that simple browning is just such a basic concept of how to kind of lock in seasoning. Anyway,
yeah,
disappointing. I was upset.
Avishar, please pack your knives and go. I'm so sorry.
See you in Last Chance Kitchen. Not over yet.
I'll do my best.
Well, Kevin, this wasn't your best week on our fantasy team. Avishar goes home. He's on your team.
Disappointing.
And then Jamie wins on my team. So I get 15 points this week. You get 11. So I close the gap a little bit, but still you have a commanding 116-89 lead. And just like you had asked, I did a total points, not just for our fantasy league, but our total points, including the first episode, which is not being incorporated into our Pack Your Knives fantasy scoring because we drafted after the first one. So it didn't carry over. But the leader in the clubhouse right now, if we're just doing accumulated points throughout the season, is Shota with 43 points, Sarah with 42. And then I think those two are in a tier above the rest with Don at 36, Gabe Aralis at 34. Those four are clearly separated themselves in the competition, but Shota and Sarah and Don, the three top scorers, all on Team Arnovitz. How do you feel?
Look, I was tired of losing, man. And look, we got a long way to go. I'm not counting my chickens, but I was tired of losing. I was tired of losing. I'm becoming a better scout. I'm going Phoenix Suns, man. I'm firing all my scouts and just going to kind of do this by eye, you know, whatever. And it's working.
Shota and Sarah, Don, Gabe, and then at next we have Byron, Jamie, Gabriel. Byron has 20, Jamie with 19. Gabriel, who's out, has 15. So just to speak to the fact that he did pretty well while he was on the show, he's ahead of the standings, even though he's eliminated. Above Chris, who's at 14, Maria at 13, Avishar 10, Nelson 5, Kiki 0, and Sasha and Brittany in the negatives. So we might see Sasha later in the show. But the bottom competitors right now who are still in the competition are Maria and Chris. So of those two, Kevin, who do you think you're most nervous about potentially being eliminated in next week's Restaurant Wars?
I mean, I'm still more nervous about Chris. Like Maria has churned out, you know, like she hasn't been on the bottom a lot. Like again, we're still, there are enough contestants in the competition where, you know, if you're a chef like Maria, who's not making, other than the tortilla thing, like fatal errors, like she's not turning in as absolute dreck. Whereas like Chris is finding himself on the bottom. Like I'm much more concerned about Chris. Of course, Tom, though, Restaurant Wars is an entirely different challenge. Mm-hmm. I love Restaurant Wars. It's going to be very interesting to see who takes executive chef, who takes front of the house. Because as we know, very little happens to the line chefs in this competition. So, you know, it's funny. We love, even through its illogic, even through the fact that we know this, it's a clear limitation of the challenge that, like, you kind of already know four of the eight contestants are pretty much safe for the most part. It's still something we love to watch, but it's going to be interesting to see who takes those roles, because this is often where a titan of a chef goes down, because the big idea people tend to gravitate and the more talented chefs tend to gravitate to that executive chef role, and the more gregarious big personalities and commanding presences tend to gravitate to the front of the house. So it's going to be interesting. I mean, doesn't Chris have line chef,
yes,
written all over him? Like, is he going to go home? No, he's going to be a line cook. And by the way, good technical cook. That's exactly where you want Chris, right? Like, he's not the most creative conceiver, so you're not going to make him executive chef. And he's a little bit of, seems like an introvert, kind of quiet guy. He's not a front of the house guy. So I don't worry about him, actually. You know what? I revise. I don't worry about him.
I'm with you. You know, it'd be fun if we, right now, who do you think is the most capable front of house chef in the competition? Is it Shota, Sarah, Don, Gabe, Byron, Jamie, Chris, or Maria? Like right now, I kind of feel like Sarah. Yeah, exactly. Sarah would be the pick for me. It's front of house.
I mean, she's the single most pleasant person. Like, I mean, what do you hate at the front of the house? You hate attitude, right? Like, you hate someone who acts like, aren't you lucky to be dining with us tonight?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She's kind of winning, you know, it's just easy. She would be front of the house for me. And I also get the sense that she's sort of also like very like closet competent. I'll tell you who else could be really good at the front of the house is Byron.
Yeah. Yeah. I see that too.
Great smile, great presence, easy to be around, almost seems reassuring in his general mood. Like that's a guy I'd have at the front of the house, provided he has organizational skills. I mean, one thing we don't know about these people, you know, we learned the other week, Tom, that like when Sarah told us that Shota is actually kind of a little bit messy, you know,
yeah,
kind of a little less organized. Seat of the pants. Like, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like he'd be good at improv. Shota is not the best at improv. So if he gets something, you know, that the line backs up, he might not be able to go to that second gear. So I think that's a great point about Byron. I also think that, you know, given that he entertains Aspen and Hamptons, mm-hmm. I feel like he puts on a show. He's able to put on a show and really like cater to, you know, putting on a really an excellent experience, something that you can't just get by walking into a restaurant. I feel like he has a certain charisma that you need to have when you're having those like high net worth customers in Aspen and Hampton. So I think that I think Byron and Sarah are probably my picks if I'm gonna pick for front of house in the next episode for Restaurant Wars. But we have Kristen Kish, who's gonna come back into the show. I was wondering when we were gonna see some of these Top Chef alums that were like Edward Lee, you know, coming back to the show. Here we have Kristen coming back, and it's going to be a different Restaurant Wars. I'm not sure exactly how different it's going to be, but clearly if you're not going to be able to go into different arenas or different empty spaces in the public space, excuse me, they're going to have a different Restaurant Wars this year, and I can't wait to watch. There are a couple uncomfortable moments that we see in the preview, Kevin, where Melissa says, I feel really uncomfortable sitting here right now. So there's going to be some drama, and it's always great to watch Restaurant Wars, and it's going to be a little bit different, but man, here we are. Clear separation of four chefs, and I'm curious to see which ones go front of house and which ones go to the executive side, because you know Gabe, Don, Sarah, and Shota are probably the leaders in the clubhouse to pick one of those two roles.
Very excited for Kristen Kish's return. She won, people forget, she beat Brooke Williamson for Top Chef. I forget what season that was. It was Seattle, maybe. And just one of my absolute favorite chefs who's ever graced this show. So I'm thrilled. It's been really fun to see kind of the alums come in. Tom, very excited. Restaurant Wars, always a thrill. Memories of Lexington. Closing thoughts for you.
I just am so excited for Jamie to come back. Her antics, yes, they're funny, but I think she has the potential to win this whole thing. And I'm glad to see that she's back. Even if it seems a little cheap to have two people returning from Last Chance Kitchen, it's good to see her back. And yes, I'm a little biased because she's on my team. I need another horse to ride in this competition, Kevin, because I am really struggling with Gabe and Byron and Jamie leading the way. I need one of those three to enter into the top to compete with Shota and Sarah.
For Tom Pavastro, this is Kevin Arnovitz, and this is Pack Your Knives.